This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You're right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high.
And good morning. You're listening to The Mighty Boo. We are KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock, and in just a bit, Press Watch is off today. Instead today, Ani Haynes hosts an interview with Stuart Perrin, author and activist working to stop sex trafficking. And then at 9:30 this morning on Fight the Empire, Per Fagerang hosts a discussion of Chinese and Western law with guest Temu Ruskola, author of Legal Orientalism. At 10 today, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, law professor Marjorie Cohn talks about forbidding the mention of racial profiling in the George Zimmerman trial. And former Black Panther Kilu Niyasha talks about Trayvon Martin and the extreme racism that surrounds the case. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Gene Bradley speaks with mystery writer Craig Johnson about his latest book in the Walt Longmire mystery series, A Serpent's Tooth. And at 11:30, Dan Johnson speaks with poet Andrea Hollander, recipient of a 2013 Oregon Literary Fellowship, about her latest book, Landscape with Female Figure, a collection of selected poems. Once again, Press Watch is off today. Stay tuned for Ani Haynes hosting an interview with Stuart Perrin, author and activist working to stop sex trafficking. And that's coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival, July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Featuring over 50 electronic and dance artists, including Purity Ring, A-Track, RJD2, and Tycho, as well as on-site art installations, a hookah lounge, and splash pool. That's July 26th through 28th, 2013, at Wolf Run Ranch in Oregon. Tickets on sale now at whatthefestival.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Good morning, good morning. This is Ani, and you are tuned to your community radio station, KBOO, your very own community radio station. It's about 5 minutes after 9 o'clock in the morning. And I know you might be tuning in right now to listen to Press Watch and the fabulous Teresa Mitchell. And if so, I want to just let you know right off the top that Teresa won't be heard this morning. She has generously ceded her time to me this week so that I can bring you a special interview with author and teacher Stuart Perrin. Press Watch will be back next week, as you might expect, 9 o'clock Thursday morning as always. And also, just to let you know, coming right up, Teresa will actually be heard tomorrow morning co-hosting Positively Revolting, a show I usually do, with me, and we'll be discussing climate change tomorrow morning. So a little preview of things to come. Tomorrow is KBOO's 14-hour flash drive membership special. If KBOO is not yet your very own community radio station, you can rectify that. You can fix all that up and join us tomorrow during our 14-hour flash drive, looking at issues from the Southern Hemisphere around the world, especially in terms of climate change, but also in terms of land distribution, as well as some cultural issues, some music throughout the day, ending tomorrow night with 2 hours of music from Brazil and from around the continent of Africa, sub-Saharan Africa anyway. And we hope that you join us all day long for that fabulous special tomorrow. Again, you can hear Teresa at 8 in the morning with myself looking at climate change starting off the day. So that's enough of previews. Joining me in the studio today, I am very happy to say, is Stuart Perrin. Stuart is a meditation teacher. He's also a spiritual master of Kundalini Yoga. And for the last 20 years or more, Stuart has worked to end the trafficking of girls and women. He's also written a novel called Little Sisters, which humanizes this overwhelming problem. Good morning, Stuart. Welcome back to KBOO.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Stuart was a guest on Positively Revolting about 4 months ago or so, and I'm interested to hear, I know that you have some updates, but I know that most of the people listening didn't actually catch that first interview 4 months ago. So let's go ahead and start from square one, as it were. How did you become aware of this problem, Stuart? How did you become aware of the situation, the horror of trafficking young girls?
Well, to be honest, I was basically an innocent. In 1992, most of my time was spent setting up meditation centers in Europe, in America, in South America, in the Middle East. And some of my students came to me and said, why don't we set up a meditation center in Kathmandu? It's a great idea. I said, all my life I've been taking Hindu, Buddhist teachings out of Asia, maybe could give something back. Anyway, we set up a center in Kathmandu. It was very successful. We had Buddhists, and we had Hindus, and we had Western people coming. And one day, the woman, Christina Jones, who was running the center, called me in New York and said, Stuart, I love Kathmandu. It's really exotic. I don't know what to do with my time here. So I said to her, Chris, you're in the second poorest country in the world. Something is going to come. 2 days later, a phone rings, and it's Chris. Stuart, you're not going to believe this. She met a Dr. Aruna Upreti, and Aruna at a UN meeting in Kathmandu. And Aruna told her about this problem of the trafficking of children from Nepal into India, where they would wind up in places like Falkland Road. I don't know if you know what Falkland Road is, but it's one of the hell holes in the world, in Bombay. And I said to Chris, I said, this has got to be our work. I said, it's been sent to us, you know. We'll set up a safe house. We'll work with doctors and NGOs to find children that are prime targets for this sex trafficking thing, and talk to their parents and get them to come live in our safe house instead of going to Falkland Road. Anyway, this thing was set up. It turned out that it was the first organization of its kind ever created in Nepal.
Really?
Yeah.
So this organization, it became the Bahini Foundation, is that?
Yes, it was the Bahini Foundation.
And that ran for many years in Nepal.
We ran it for 4 years in Nepal. Christina was getting, you know, emphysema. I mean, Kathmandu is a very polluted place.
It's a hard place to live.
It's a hard place to live. And I finally said, Chris, let's talk to Dr. Upreti, Aruna Upreti, and we'll incorporate Bahini under REST, which was her organization. Mm-hmm. You come back to the United States and get well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so we did that, and Bahini is being run actually under the name of REST. You know, it became part of REST to this day. And Aruna called us about a year ago and told us, you know, because we started the Bahini Foundation, it saved the lives of about 10,000 children, which is kind of sent chills through me
when
I heard
really
that.
That's really sobering.
Yeah. Anyway, in 1995, we did a video called My Name is Gita. And it was, the music was composed by an Indian man who works in Bollywood, and Christina did the singing. She's a very incredible mezzo-soprano, Christina. And I saw the video, and it was a five-minute video. I said, no, this has got to be something bigger. So I sat down, and honestly, like a force of nature, this book, Little Sisters, came out of me. It took 3 weeks to write the story. And I originally wrote it as a screenplay because I wanted it to be a movie. I wanted the whole world. I said, nobody, people don't know about it. The whole world's got to know about this. Anyway, at that time in 1995, I was living in a world of the deaf and dumb. I really mean that. I mean, you would talk to people, what do we care? It's in Nepal. We don't give a damn.
It's too far away. Too what does this away? Have to do with me?
Right.
The world's got problems all over.
Honey, exactly.
Yeah.
And I was like, my God, you know? And even the people in Nepal, it was extraordinary. They would say, well, it is their karma. They will come back in their next lifetime and it'll be better for them. And I, you know, we ran into dead ends everywhere we tried to do this thing. So I put the screenplay away. I said, eh. And I took it out about 4 years ago. And at that time, I had written a couple of novels. And I said to myself, Stuart, this would be an extraordinary novel. So I wrote it as a novel. I had a literary agent. She knew nothing about this part of my life. And she's a total activist, my literary agent. She's every cause, you know, every righteous cause in the world. And she's incredible, you know. So I submitted the novel. She said, great, it needs a lot of work. It needs editing, blah, blah, blah. But it took me 4 years to get this thing to its final form.
So 3 weeks to write and 4 years to finish.
As I told people, I was pregnant with this book for 18 years, and I had 4 years of hard labor, you know, to produce the book, to flush out the characters, to make everything believable, and to develop all the locations. And, you know, it takes place in New York, it takes place in Nepal, it takes place in Mumbai. Mm-hmm. At any rate, the book came out, and today is becoming an engine for setting up events all over the country. In fact, I have four of them here in Eugene. In the next, here in Portland, two in Portland and two in Eugene coming up. And in New York, Indiana, I've been invited by the Attorney General to come out there and do an event in Indiana. And it's going on and on, you know?
The thing that I really appreciate about Little Sisters, which I have read, is that it humanizes the issue. I understand, you know, I don't agree with, but I understand when those people that you talked to, you know, 18 years ago were like, oh, it's so far away. There's so much going on. What does this have to do with me? We feel very distant. We feel very disconnected because we, you know, we pray we don't know somebody in our own lives, in our own families who this is happening with. And so we Westerners can feel very set apart. But when I was reading Little Sisters, it again absolutely humanizes the issue. The characters, you see exactly how these things play out in people's lives and how the reality of village life is in this post-industrial, you know, society. So there are economic issues at play. There are issues of culture and sexism at play. There are issues of imperialism at play.
Mm-hmm.
And you are quite. I really appreciate that the book brings all of these issues into focus for a moment and allows us to see how they interact to create this horrendous situation.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to do. I said to myself, you could do a documentary movie. But to do a documentary movie like Little Sisters, I would have gotten killed. You can't go into those brothels. They would never let you film. They would never let, you know, you would get killed. I mean, Christina went into one of the brothels. She posed as a doctor. And if they would have found out what she was doing
there. Tell me more about that.
Well,
why did she end up going? Why did she take that chance to begin with?
She wanted to find out what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when she went in there, the only way she could do it is she had to pose as something else. And she went into the brothel and came out with these horror stories of what she saw.
Yeah.
You know, and when I heard about it, I said, what are you, out of your mind? I said, you could have gotten killed going into those places. At any rate, I wanted to render this.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make this whole thing available in a book that is kind of a page-turning book. It's a suspense novel. It's a love story. It's a multicultural story. It takes place all over the world. And I wanted it to be something to bring to people that not just preaching to the choir, but anyone could read this book and say, my God, something's got to be done.
Mm-hmm.
There can't be a horror like this going on in the world and people not really doing anything about it. Well, in today's world, there are a lot of people doing things about this. And I to me, it's a miracle when I see this thing in the media all the time. I know there are many, many groups around the United States doing things about this. But it still hasn't even touched the tip of the iceberg. This thing is a $27 million. It's 27 million people involved in this mm-hmm. thing. And it's a $32 billion a year industry. And it really is not just in Nepal and India.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere in the world. There isn't a country in the world that isn't touched by this today.
There are, by some estimates, I mean, numbers vary to some degree, but generally agreed upon from the research I've been doing that there are about 600,000 to 800,000 people who are being trafficked annually across international borders. That's not exclusive of sex trafficking, but about 80% of that is sex trafficking. And the other 20% of those people being trafficked across international borders are sold into forced labor. The vast majority of the people being trafficked are women, and half of the people being trafficked are children. There's an estimated 30 million people living as slaves in our world today.
That's right.
And as you were saying, it happens in every country, including the U.S.
You know, Ani, to me, the crime hasn't been touched on yet. The real crime is not prostitution. The real crime is raping, torturing, you know, brutalizing 10 to 14-year-old children, 15-year-old children, brainwashing them into becoming prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are victims. You understand? And in many places, this crime is a misdemeanor. The laws are starting to get stronger now. The real crime is people. There's a demand side of this problem. The men that are paying to sleep with 10-year-old brainwashed children
mm-hmm.
that, you know, are afraid to do it, that wind up sleeping with 20 men a day because their souls and their wills have literally been ripped out of them and they cannot do anything. This is a criminal activity that is beyond all human comprehension.
Well, and there's physical coercion. I mean, sure, it's a soul-breaking process, no doubt about it, but, these girls are more or less kidnapped and held in captivity to service.
That's right. And I look at it in a very simple way. This crime needs to be punished.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be punished on a very powerful level. Now, there's another element to this, which is they're almost like an oxymoron. You know, there's the element of compassion. These children, in order to extricate them from this life, there has to be unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be places for them to go where they can be nurtured, loved, where they can be provided for in a way where they begin to find their souls again. They begin to find that will to live again in our society. So these two elements are essential to each other. You know, one is the punishment. It can't be a misdemeanor to do what these people are doing to children.
Mm-hmm.
Second element is loving the children. The third element is very interesting because I lived in Texas years ago. And I ran a meditation center in a place called Denton, Texas, years ago. And I set up a program in Fort Worth in a prison. And I did it for 5 years. I used to go there twice a week, and I would teach meditation. And it was finding angels in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have people that would come. They were mafia people. They were, I'm talking murderers, gangsters, burglars, they were, you know, everything, incredible characters used to come to these classes. At the end of the classes, they would all line up and hug me and say, thank you for coming here and teaching and providing this level for us. Now, I was building a house on the meditation grounds, and it was an in-house project. We were doing it with the people that were part of our group. And every Saturday or Sunday, I would have anywhere from 10 to 15 of these inmates would come out to my house. I set up a program with the prison. And they would come out, they would spend the day, they would have lunch and dinner, and then we would bring them back. And we would, you know, like human beings, we try to treat them, mm-hmm. you know? Anyway, there was a guy there named Charlie. I'll never forget. Charlie was about 5'10". He was built like Sylvester Stallone. You know, well, most mm-hmm. of them, all they do is weightlift in prison.
Sure.
And he was busted for having run a string of brothels in Houston. Franchising brothels, this guy. And before that, he was a carpenter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So one day, he came out to my house on a Saturday. One day, I'm walking on the meditation grounds. There's Charlie with a carpenter's belt around his waist. And I said, Charlie, what's up? He said, Stuart, look, I'm not a man of many words. I can't tell you what your program has done for my life, but I can go and work a few hours while I'm out here as a carpenter to say thank you. Brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah, no doubt.
You understand? So there's the punishment. There's the compassion for the children. But then in the prisons, to extricate those people that they made a mistake.
So not only what I'm hearing you say overall is there's the punishment aspect, there's the compassion for the victims, but there's also looking at overall healing for all the people on this planet who
are
you know, really many folks are broken in many ways.
That's right.
And that obviously is one of the driving factors in when we talk about something as I'll just go ahead and say sick. I don't generally judge a whole lot of things, but as sick as the idea of buying or selling another human being in captivity, it's sick. And so I think ultimately overall, yes, compassion and healing is important for our world.
It's sick, honey, but it's, again, an economic thing.
It is, and I wanted to get into that. I know we just have a few minutes left. I know people who hear this are generally taken aback, and how could this happen? How could this happen? Well, something, you know. But the economic forces are quite present that drive this. And so when we look at, say, a country like Nepal, one of the poorest countries on the planet, where a family in a village might have an income of $30 a year?
When I was in Nepal then, it was $15 a year.
Okay. And suddenly somebody comes into the village and they say, and it's maybe even somebody who you've seen before, they come in every now and again and they say, we can give you $200. and we've got work for your oldest daughter. We can take her. She can be a maid in Kathmandu. Is this sort of the scenario?
You know, in Nepal at that time, and I'm sure it's going on today, if you have a daughter, it's if she doesn't get married, this is some terrible thing for your family. To marry her, you have to have
dowry price.
Dowry. Mm. These people that are making $15 a year and living on a sustainable, there's no dowry. Mm-hmm. So the daughter becomes a shame for the family. Somebody comes to the village and says, I can get your daughter a job as a nanny in Bombay and pay me $200. You know, I'll pay you $200 for your child. You know, and they take the girl that winds up being sold to a brothel on Falkland Road. Mm-hmm. You understand?
Yeah.
So it's really a yak or a water buffalo has more value than a child, than a girl. Mm-hmm. At least they can plow the fields.
And again, this is where we find the themes of economic devastation, of cultural issues and sexism all entwined mm-hmm. in a perfect storm. And that's the situation in Nepal, but we can translate that the world over and find
Absolutely.
Its specific set of circumstances that allow this practice to flourish in just about every country on the planet.
Yes, that is true.
So we have just about 4 minutes left, and I want to leave people with some information for empowerment. Right, because now people are more aware of the problem than they were 25 minutes ago. What can we do? How can we try to end this horror?
Well, not an easy answer.
I wasn't thinking that we could just, you know, send in two box tops.
Look, first of all, people have to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. You understand? Happy people, loving people. People that have joy in their hearts do not sell or traffic children. So it starts with oneself. One has to be able to build inside themselves a system that allows them to live a compassionate life, to understand what it means to suffer in this world and that everybody in one way or another is going through it. Okay, that's the first. To me, this is the most important step. Because without building that kind of inner life, human beings are wrapped up in their minds and their brains and all the problems, tensions that initially lead to creating this kind of madness. Second thing is that, like, you know, for instance, I am reestablishing the Bahini Foundation. Understand? That is going to be going. Mm-hmm. And probably within 3 or 4 months, we'll have a 501c3. Purpose of the Bahini Foundation will be to raise awareness, to continue to raise awareness of this problem. Second thing will be to help to give money, donate money to organizations that are doing this work on the ground. And there are many of those organizations all over the world that are doing this kind of work on the ground. And the third thing, which is going to probably be the biggest project, is to set up safe houses for children throughout the United States that somehow have extricated themselves from this whole life of prostitution, mm-hmm. you know? So people can donate, they can contribute time, energy, but the most important thing is they have to get their own acts together.
So take care of yourself first, then contribute to the overall solution, building support for girls trying to escape this trap.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And with that, we are out of time. You are going to be speaking in town?
Yes, I'm going to be speaking at the Rotary Club, actually, in a couple of hours.
Okay.
At a lunch. And then there's going to be meetings with members of the Rotary Club on next Tuesday, and then people involved with the Bahini Foundation. Then I'm going to be in Eugene at the Tsunami Bookstore, where I'm going to be talking about this and also, you know, sharing my book, Little Sisters, with people.
For more information, where can people go? You have a website, Stuart Perrin?
I have stuartperrin.com. That's my, actually, meditation website. Mm-hmm. We're developing the Bahini Foundation website right now. People can... Are we out of time?
Or? Yeah, I think we're out of time. But I can tell you what, if you are listening right now, give a call to the front desk and we'll have more contact information there waiting for you. The front desk's number is 503-231-8032. I'm Ani Raven. I've been sitting in for the fabulous Teresa Mitchell. You can hear the both of us tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock talking about climate change at the beginning of our 14-hour fabulous fundraising day here on KBOO, your community radio station. I want to thank Stuart Perrin for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me, Ani.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Friday, July 19th, from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., tune in for KBOO's one-day flash drive fundraiser, a day filled with news and music from the equator to Antarctica.
Lecture topics will include climate change, gay rights, and an overview of African land grabs. Don't miss out on the chance to explore underrepresented music and news from across the Southern Hemisphere on July 19th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And we have an interesting program prepared. It's all about, well, we'll get into that when we get into it. Our guest is Tamu Ruskola, who is a law professor at Emory University. And he's written a very interesting book on legal orientalism. So, Tamu Ruskola, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
So why don't we just start right out? What exactly is Orientalism?